we present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome back to the News Quiz. We start with a clipping from the Associated Press, read by Peter Donaldson.
A woman is suing her former psychiatrist for malpractice, claiming he convinced her she had 120 personalities and then charged her insurance company for group therapy.
Oh, thanks to Neil Larkey from Belgium for that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Tony Hawks? I'm facing them on my left, Jeremy Hardy, and a newcomer to the News Quiz, Linda Smith. Francis, your first question on this first programme in the new series of the News Quiz. Which Commons motion went down a bomb?
I believe this is to do with the bombing of Iraq, which Tony Blair has decided to embark upon. And everyone supported him except for, I think, about 20 Labour backbenchers, Tony Benn, Tamdiel, those sorts of people. Because Clinton thinks it's a good idea. I think this is the only justification I can hear for it. Whenever you ask ministers why we're doing this, they say, well, the Americans are doing it, and we all think it's a good idea to keep behind Bill Clinton, much better than being in front of him, but anyway. And it's all to do with bombing these mysterious palaces. There are these vast buildings. They've released satellite spy photos of them that claim to be palaces, but apparently are secret storage dumps for anthrax and things. A bit like the Palace of Westminster, which claims to be a palace, but is in fact just full of curtains belonging to the Lord Chancellor, as far as I can see. It's that sort of thing. But they don't send UN inspectors in there, do they? But this is what we're going to do.
Can't stop it now, the war. I mean, UN Secretary-General is trying to stop it, but it's all arranged now. You can't... But the flights are booked. And
I don't know what all this fuss is about inspecting the weapons. Can't we just glance back through the order book? Surely we've kept a record.
I'm not sure about this targeting thing. Everyone's talking about how these weapons are incredibly precise now and very, very accurate. I'm not sure about... I mean, Clinton claims to have very good aim, but I think there are cocktail dresses that prove the contrary.
Two points to Francis. The Commons debate on Iraq ended with an overwhelming majority in favour of using all necessary means against Saddam Hussein. Any strike against Iraq will involve the use of smart bombs and a new generation of even smarter bombs. The difference is that while they still hit hospitals and orphanages, they can think of a really good soundbite before Kate Adie arrives. Tony, who paid the price for pulling up the covers?
Well, it'll either be Gordon Brown or Lord Irvin, because they've both been in the news about refurbishment. I think Lord Irvin's having his apartments in the House of Lords refurbished at a cost of £650,000, and it's got to be funded by the taxpayer. And I love this expression. I've been reading it in the newspaper, funded by the taxpayer. It makes you think it's actually just one taxpayer that does it. I think they should have the opposite of the National Lottery, which is, you know, 56 million to one chance that you will be the loser of the year, and you will be that taxpayer.
Lord Irvin, of course, once famously compared himself to Henry VIII's Cardinal Wolsey, so he'll have no objection to being arrested for high treason and paraded through the streets to cries of off with his headboard. Linda, your first question. Which torch might disappear into the deep mauve yonder?
This is William Hague, isn't it? Was it 36, isn't he? It's never 36 human years, is it, really? Sort of Dorian Gray in reverse. You feel there's a painting in his attic where he looks really lovely. He's decided, William Hague, that things aren't going very well for the Tory party. Something's wrong. Now, what is it? Can't be the policies, because the Labour Party have got them and they're doing ever so well with them. So it's not the policies, so it must be that pesky logo. So they've got to get rid of the torch and they've got to change the colour to a different blue or maybe mauve. All a bit weird, really, because apparently he's colourblind, which would explain his appearance at the Notting Hill Carnival.
He can't possibly be Prime Minister. You can't have a Prime Minister that's colourblind. It would be too much of a risk for the nation. He might hit that red nuclear button thinking it was grey and it was just a button that you hit to invite John Major round to tea.
what I thought it says, he said he was relaunching the Conservative Party. I mean, how can you relaunch something that's sunk to the bottom of the ocean with all hands? Titanic. I was saying, well, relaunch that today. But the third thing, the one that Linda missed, was they're going to publish their finances. They're going to publish the names of everyone who gives them, I think, more than 5,000 quid. Unless they can't be named for legal reasons because they're awaiting trial on massive fraud charges. All the others will be named.
Correct, yes. I have 2 points there. Mr. Haggis has, as Francis said, vowed to produce an authoritative list of all the big donors. It's not a new idea. It used to be called the New Year's Honours List. Jeremy, a piece of music for you. Jeremy, who won't be allowed to keep a secret?
Is it the Lodge?
It is.
Ah, now, judges are going to have to fess up to the fact that they're Masons. And a number of senior Masons are quite upset about this exposition of their activities. And one of them, who's a senior judge, said that the Masons are no different from a golf club. I suppose the similarity is that they're rather exclusive, a bit iffy about Jews, and full of corrupt people doing shady deals all the time.
Do they get their clothes from the Freemasons catalogue?
One trouser leg missing.
Absolutely.
Jack Straw this week unveiled plans for a register listing those judges who belong to the Freemasons. The Home Secretary says that he can no longer tolerate clandestine meetings conducted in the dead of night by people wearing bizarre costume. So that's the last time William Straw has his friends round to the house. So the scores at the end of round one are Francis and Tony 4, but Jeremy and Linda also with 4 points. And we start round two with an item spotted in the Northwich Guardian from Brian Hardy of Cheshire.
With reference to our court report in last week's issue, we would like to point out that Graham Richards was charged with threatening 3 boys with a pool cue, not a mother, as stated in the article.
Francis, what political heavyweight became a bit keyed up this week?
Well, the only heavyweight I can think of in those terms is Helmut Kohl. Would it be him?
Yes.
Is it Helmut
yes,
Kohl?
Yes,
yes. All right. Well, he's been in London having dinner, becoming a freeman of the City of London. He got the keys to the city. And there was a lovely photo of him posing outside Downing Street with the Blairs, Hannelore and Helmut, I believe, in their evening dress, before going off for dinner. The last time he was over here, I remember he went to dinner at Buckingham Palace, and then afterwards he was spotted having dinner at one of the Conran restaurants on the south of the Thames, having a second dinner immediately after a huge Buckingham Palace banquet. Oh, Helmut Kohl, he likes a little snack before retiring after an 8-course banquet. His wife published a cookery book a couple of years ago, which is full of the most amazingly wonderful recipes. There's one for stuffed pig stomach. She says, Helmut likes this for his Sunday breakfast. You take an entire pig stomach, fill it with sausages, put it in the oven for an hour or so, and then hand it over to Chancellor Kohl, who demolishes it. Redwood was beastly about him, but then there was a great thing saying William Hague had slapped Redwood down. Some people would pay good money to witness this thing.
Yes, it was Chancellor Kohl who received the Freedom of the City of London. He was honoured at a luncheon banquet where thousands of pounds worth of salmon, beef and fine British cheeses were consumed. It's not been revealed yet what the other guests ate. 2 points to Francis. Tony, what may be wacky but could be safer than backy?
It's wacky and backy tobacky. Well, there was a report that saying that cannabis was safer than alcohol and tobacco. It was actually a report originally commissioned by Ian Botham and Phil Tufnell. But the UN health chiefs have suppressed this, so there was a lot of pressure on them from people that were saying, especially the Americans, saying this will encourage the legalised cannabis campaign, and people that think it would be much better for the youth of today to be out on the streets drunk, fighting and overturning cars than just sitting stoned in a room, giggling uncontrollably at videotapes of the Teletubbies. Basically, I think you should legalise drugs, because if you make something illegal, you give it kudos, young people want to do it. So what they should do is legalise drugs and make something really innocuous illegal, like knitting. And then you have blokes on street corners, instead of drug dealers, they'd be selling knitting patterns. Do you a sleeveless pullover, all right. Get you the wool Thursday. And hey, don't share your needle.
Points to you. Linda, here's a piece of music for you to listen to.
Precious people always tell me that's a step too far. Do you really want to hurt me? Do you really want to make me cry? Do you really want to hurt me?
Linda, who can show restraint if they really want to?
Teachers, they've been told this week that they can now restrain unruly pupils. They can sort of put a hand on them and push them or hold them, but not hit them, in fact, not hurt them. In fact, there's a rather lovely little phrase in the report, a lyrical little phrase. They can shepherd them from the room. And here's Mrs. Crabtree, 35, been a teacher for 10 years. And we've got Craig, a glue-crazed thug. Come by, oh dear, Craig stabbed her with a craft knife. She'll lose points for that.
2 points to Linda. Jeremy, what's a nice Jewish boy like Nick doing in a faith like that?
This is Nick Carter. Is that right? No, not Nick Carter. That was the man who wrote pornographic novels that I used to read in my teenage years. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, members of the public. I don't know how that happened. This is Nick Howard, son of Michael Howard, who, although raised as a Jew, went to Eton, where he converted for his own safety, probably, converted to Christianity, and now is proselytising at Cambridge, trying to convert Jewish students to Christianity.
That's right. And so at the end of round two, the scores are, everybody, 8 points. Francis, why isn't Sir Rupert basking in the sun?
Well, could be any number of things. I noticed that Blair this week has been attacking people who cash in on Princess Di by putting out frightful rubbish, but didn't mention the Times newspaper, which all last week had pages of stuff saying, was she pregnant? Was she murdered by MI5 and Mossad and the KGB? But that's owned by Mr. Murdoch, and he can do no wrong. But what he's been up to this week, I know not. I mean, apart from sucking up to Blair, or rather being sucked up to by Blair, perhaps. Perhaps my colleague here can help me.
Yes, perhaps I can. What do you need, a cup of tea or something?
I think Linda may have the answer.
Sir relevant here?
Yes.
Well, if it's to do with his knighthood...
Yeah.
Well, he hasn't got a knighthood.
I'm not surprised that you don't know about this, Francis, because it wasn't actually published in any Murdoch paper. Unusual fit of shyness from Mr. Murdoch. But he was actually made a papal knight, which is causing a bit of a fuss, really, from Catholics who see him as having bought this favour, which is unprecedented in the Catholic Church. Catholic Church do their best to make Father Ted look like a documentary, don't they?
The award of a papal knighthood to Rupert Murdoch has attracted hundreds of complaints from prominent Catholics. Mr. Murdoch, or Sir Rupert, says he is a deeply religious man and that Catholic priests feature on a regular basis in the news of the world. So I'll give a point to Francis for almost getting it right. Tony, here's your piece of music.
But every day she grew unhappier on a mountain in Switzerland. Yo-la-la-la-lo, yo-la-lo. But every day she grew a little lonelier. Which way to turn, which way to go? Day after day, she'd pine a heart away. Yo-la-la-la-la-lady, but no love came her way.
I could have listened to that for hours.
Tony, which former Yorkie took a Swiss roll down the Alps?
I get all the hard ones. Duchess of York, whilst on a skiing holiday, fell on her ski pole and chipped a bit of bone off her shoulder, just in a desperate attempt to lose weight. And she heroically stayed on and strapped one arm under her jacket and carried on with one pole, don't know his name, And she carried on. It's fantastic to think that these people, you know, in the face of all this adversity, can carry on having a holiday. It's nice to know. But she actually had the accident, and as a very common skiing accident, she had it whilst chatting. I think it was with Paddy McNally, actually, who is an ex-boyfriend of hers. But whatever he said must have had her completely flabbergasted, because she turned around and fell over. I can only assume he said something like, do you know, Fergie, the Queen really likes you. And she fell to the ground, staggered by this, really. And
perhaps he told her her favourite joke, the one about the anchovy.
Do you remember that?
Oh, I think you should run it by us.
This is a true story. When she got engaged to Prince Andrew, transpired that what had really won his heart was her wicked sense of humour, and in particular a joke she told him about anchovies over dinner one night, and he decided she was a fun girl and he'd like to marry her. And the joke in question was, what smells worse than an anchovy? And Prince Andrew said, I don't know. And she said, an anchovy's bottom! And they were married within the year.
Hang on, I'm just writing that down.
Sarah Ferguson fell off her skis, suffering the first chip on her shoulder not to be inflicted by the Queen. Next day, however, she was back on the slopes. She could only use one arm, but it was the first time she'd not had a handout for the entire holiday. Linda, who proved this week that in 2 years' time, size really will matter?
Size will matter. I think this is a millennium question. Millennium Dome, Mad Mandy in the Blunder Dome. I think the sexless dome giant Peter Mandelson has decided that there ought to be a huge statue at the Millennium Dome, and it will be a big sort of reclining figure, big silvery figure lying back, and it will be so huge that people can get inside and crawl about and see all the mysterious workings of the human body. It'll be a sort of liver world. Lovely, with kids splashing about in the sort of colon flume and things like this. A lovely thing. But there's another giant statue this week, the Angel of the North, this great big statue that's gone up near Gateshead. And it is definitely Northam, because it's up there, it must be freezing, it's not wearing a coat. And that's all the statue things I know, really.
Poor old Mandy. I mean, the whole dome thing, everyone's pulled out, he's lost all his sponsors. There's going to be no trades for that stand at all. It'll just be Mandy and the St John's Ambulance Brigade. He's lost BT, Toyota will pull out. There'll be some homemade chutney in a bouncy castle.
He says BT haven't pulled out, and they say they have.
Something wrong with his answering machine.
There's another story about size. It's about the... Because I can add this as well to the thing. But isn't it something to do with they've discovered that if you're born in the sort of spring, babies are more likely to grow tall than if they're born in the winter.
And the only evidence for this is that Douglas Hurd was born in the spring and he's taller than Ronnie Corbett.
Well, that's good enough for me.
Peter Mandelson says he wanted the huge statue to initially dazzle onlookers with its glittering facade before revealing its hollow interior. It's modelled on an idea he had a few years back called New Labour. The 320-foot Madonna may feature an observation deck at the base of its spine from which Mr. Mandelson will greet the first visitors to the dome. That should be worth seeing. Mandy talking out of someone else's arse for a change. Jeremy, which grand offer held viewers to ransom?
I saw this. I was watching the telly, as you do sometimes when you're old and bedridden. And Esther's got a programme, Esther Ransom, and it's the same as, you know, Ricky Lake and Oprah and Kilroy and The Time and the Place and all them ones. And it was about sex workers. And the sex workers were saying justifiably that people who work as prostitutes tend to feel abused and degraded by their profession. And this man who used prostitutes said, I have no shame at all, and produced his wad spontaneously for the camera. And it was £1,000. And no one would take it. He said, all right, I'll prove that prostitutes are happy to do anything for the money. Here's £1,000. And none of them would Esther took it. Esther took them. She didn't take it, and, you know. She just talked, you know. And
and then gave it back to him and stuff. But none of them took it, which is good news, I think, because it shows that prostitutes have some dignity and should up their rates. Next time a man pulls over the road in Streatham, the young woman should say, that'll be £1,000, thank you.
I don't know why she's got involved with it. What on earth would a daytime TV presenter know about prostitution?
20 viewers rang in to complain that such people were unsuitable for exposure on daytime TV, but Esther Anson says she was going to carry on doing the show anyway.
So, at the end of the show, because I live in Streatham where there are a lot of prostitutes, and they're quite handy as babysitters, because you just go up the road when you're stuck for a babysitter, you pick one up, and you bring them back, and then you just go out. And you say she'll probably just want to talk, and then you come back about 4 hours later and give them their usual rate, and it's fine.
I look forward to seeing if that stays in the programme.
So at the end of round three, Francis and Tony have 11 points, but Jeremy and Linda have leapt into the lead with 13. And before we start the final round, here's a piece spotted in the Daily Telegraph.
The latest New Scientist reports that the Compaq Computer Company is to change the on-screen instruction "press any key" to "press the return key." This, it seems, is because Compaq cannot cope with the phone calls asking where the any key is.
Thanks to Maggie Stansfield of Stoke Somerset for that. Francis, your piece of music.
Stop your messing around. Better think of your future. Time you straighten right out.
Rudy, a message to you by the Specials. Francis, who sent a hot message about surly service?
Oh, I thought this was going to be about Rudy Hullett, but it's obviously not.
I agree.
If you really want to know, it's Mr. Wahab Iqbal, I think he's called,
yes.
Who is the editor-in-chief of Tandoori magazine and has written a scathing editorial. They often have these hot editorials in Tandoori magazine. it's a sort of Joe Frazee editorial, which has caused a great stir in the world of Tandoori magazine to those who subscribe to this publication, because he's been rude about waiters. He says that waiters in Indian restaurants, when customers come in, don't beam with pleasure and say, oh, you've made my day by coming in. They look as if they're not terribly happy and not terribly well paid, which is possibly because they're not very well paid.
Tony, which loony wasn't a lieutenant?
Right. Bloke went down to... Well, went to America, came back. He got himself a lieutenant, naval lieutenant's uniform. And then he went to a naval base in Cornwall, or hung around there, and then met a lady sergeant or from there, a woman sergeant, and invited him to come and visit. And then they asked him to stay for 5 days, even though he wasn't an American lieutenant in the Navy at all, and just pretending. And it took them 5 days to suss out that he was just a fraud. And they noticed that he had some plastic medals, I think, and that's what that's when they realised, hello, something might be up here. They ignored the fact that his name was Mark Looney. And it was Lieutenant Looney that they were showing around. But they're a little bit nervous about some other lieutenants they've got staying with them called Lieutenant Dangerous Psychopath and Lieutenant Selling Secrets to the Enemy.
What's the dodgy medals that gave him away? Someone just said, oh, what's this one for? This troll on a key ring.
It's the story of Mark Looney, a restaurant doorman from Brighton who spent 5 days in an RAF base posing as a lieutenant in the American Navy. Mr. Looney expressed surprise that it took him 5 days to be rumbled. He thought it would be very obvious that he was an imposter when someone shouted, chocks away, and he hid all the Ferrero Rocher. 2 points to Tony. Linda, which freshman already has double honours in canoe building and alligator poaching?
Oh, this is a heartwarming story, actually, of gritty determination. It's about this young man from Peru, an Amazonian Indian, young fellow, born in the rainforest, in a canoe, in fact, born in a canoe, raised in a palm leaf hut. But he had a dream that he would be educated, and he went to school, first of all, in a rainforest town, and then he progressed to college in Lima, and then he went to study in the United States, and then finally he's now ended up as a postgraduate student at Oxford University, which shows the remarkable lengths people will go to avoid sting.
Really born in a canoe. That's fantastic to think you could be born in a canoe, because you'd think the mother would have said, look, pull over to the side. I'm having a baby.
They're very fashionable canoe births now.
Oh. It's the story of Miguel Hilario, a child of the Peruvian rainforest who's won a scholarship to Oxford. His way of life has been unchanged for thousands of years, and he arrived here with a number of bizarre, irrational beliefs, such as that automatic sliding doors were worked by demons and that New Labour were committed to reducing NHS waiting lists. Jeremy, which Polly was pretty helpful?
This is a parrot, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. This must be the parrot who... this bloke parked his Sherpa van up, and although Sherpas are very loyal, supposedly, he left the handbrake off and his Sherpa tensing van ran him over, crushing his leg. And he was shouting out things. But no one could hear except this intelligent, intuitive, plucky parrot. And people heard the parrot shouting and thought, well, that's ridiculous. How could a parrot have a Sherpa van parked on its thigh? Clearly this parrot is crying wolf and it will learn its lesson. And then gradually they thought, well, what's up with this? What's in its trill? So they went up and they spoke to the parrot, and the parrot said, there's a bloke out there, he's got a van on his leg. And they said, that's your own mind working there, that's not mere repetition, is it? And he said, no. And then they went exploring. They went exploring. And then they found the man parked under the van and rescued him by phoning the AA.
Large parts of that were true, so 2 points. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Simon, this is from a magazine called Algarve Resident, an English language magazine for expats. It's headed An Evening Alone with Miss Emily Barlaston, OBE. Barrington's Invalle de Lobo is holding the second of its international winter concerts on the 17th of October at 9 p.m. when the renowned Miss Emily Barlaston, OBE, makes her first appearance in Portugal. She is one of the founders of the Enskede Hengelo Naturist Workers Cycling Club. Recently, she celebrated the liberation of Holland by giving concerts for English soldiers, whom she had earlier entertained in hospital beds.
Tony.
Now, this is from the Sussex Express. It's an advert, and it goes, Downcroft Nursery, specialising in removal of existing glasshouses... an erection of single swellings.
So at the end of round four, the final scores are Francis and Tony 15, but Jeremy and Linda clinging to the lead and victory with 17 points. Before we leave you, here's a cutting sent in by Graham Kidd from Guysborough, which he spotted in the Express.
President Clinton is a better saxophone player than a golfer, says Dan, head pro of Little Rock's Country Golf Club. But the president does have one thing going for him. Secret agents line the fairways for his protection and to help him with those wayward shots. His balls are unmistakable. But sometimes they have a life of their own.
That's all for this week. Until the next time, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz this week were Francis Wheen, Tony Hawkes, Linda Smith and Jeremy Hardy. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script was written by Hugh Rycroft with Tom Jameson and Dave Cohen. The producer was John Rolfe.